think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
So they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas.
My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 254 of Low Limit Football on this 16th of September, 2019. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight there is a sudden lack of unbeaten teams in Europe's top five leagues. We're going to discuss who they are and why. There is new blood in the EPL scoring goals at an alarming rate. We're going to talk about the emergence of these new superstars in the Premier League, and we get set to kick off the Champions League tonight with some tasty matchups on match day one. We're going to let you know which matchups to watch for with our special guest tonight, freelance football writer Harry Harris, who will be joining us in just a moment. First, let me get my co-host in here, Mr. Roberto Rojas. How you doing, my man?
Doing well, Joe, doing well, but I'm kind of a bit skeptical about our debate that we had this morning on about who's the greatest quarterback of all time. Okay. You know, that's kind of a thing that I had a little bit in doubt this morning. Other than that, it's been good.
I'm ready to defend my position. I know the names you brought up, and it was funny. So just as real quick background, Zlatan Ibrahimovic came out yesterday and said that he's the greatest player in MLS of all time. And Rob, by the way, I want to say it's kind of funny that I think somehow our homes are bugged, you and I, because yesterday, I'm sorry, what was it? What was the other topic? Oh, it was about the unbeaten teams, right, in the top five leagues. You and I were talking about, should we talk about that, that I had noticed something. And then Bleacher Report, like an hour later, posts on their Twitter feed something about unbeaten teams.
Yeah, they're essentially stealing of our ideas. So yeah. For anyone that's a part of Bleacher Report listening, please credit us next time.
It goes further than that, because this morning, as you and I were having our discussion after Zlatan's comments about being the greatest of all time, I turned on my SiriusXM and they're getting ready to go to Jason Davis. And Jason Davis, the first thing he's talking about, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and wants to have a debate on who's the greatest footballer in MLS of all time. And I'm like, wait a minute. Rob and I were just talking about that this morning. You can't take our ideas all of a sudden and move them along. So, I'm totally kidding. But at the same time, it was funny that you and I wanted to talk about some of these topics. And this is how we decide the show every week. And here they are. All the other mainstream media outlets are discussing the topics that you and I are discussing. So I thought it was pretty funny. Before I go any further, if you don't mind, I'd like to dedicate my show tonight to one of my best friends, Jay Hine, who passed away on Saturday after battling a glioblastoma. And I miss him like hell, and I love him to death. And, hopefully, his wife, Kim, and his kids, Michael and Jamie, are find some peace in the fact that that dad is no longer in pain and one of my best friends, even though he's not here physically with us anymore. He's always in my heart, and I love you, man. So, all right, enough sad stuff, right? Let's do trivia, because I want to bring on our special guest and get going. Do you have trivia ready for us?
I do have a trivia.
Oh,
ready.
Rock and roll. Let's do it.
All right. So this one's from Opta, Joe, okay. the Opta Sports, the main stats account. Mm-hmm. But so this is actually interesting. So Chelsea's average age of 21 years and 124 days is the youngest average of league goal scorers this season across all the 98 teams in the top five European leagues.
Wow.
Can you name the other four to make up that top five?
Oh, my God. Of youngest goal scorers. Okay.
The teams, I'm saying. So Chelsea is the youngest one at 21 years and 124 days. So there are four other teams that are a bit older than Chelsea so far this season that have scored.
I owe you four teams from five leagues.
No. Four teams from five leagues.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily have to be from five leagues. It's not like we're doing one from each league. There could be
two
Premier League teams or something like that. I gotcha. I do have one that I want to write down because of one player. So Chelsea, okay. All right. That's a good one. That is a good question. That's going to be interesting to see what the answer is at the end of the show. So. We're going to do two things at once here tonight, Rob, which I think it might be the first time we've done it. I don't know. 254 shows. We might have done it once before, but I'm saying tonight is the first time. So the hell with it.
First time for everything.
That's right. Because joining us now on Low Limit Football is our special guest, Harry Harris, freelance football writer. And we are going to do opening thoughts together because we wanted to have Harry on tonight to talk about Champions League. And our opening thoughts is going to be about Champions League. So, Harry, welcome back to the show. How are you tonight?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thanks for joining us. Really, really appreciate you coming on. Our opening thoughts topic tonight was going to be the Champions League. Obviously, it kicks off tomorrow. And, you know, although we've got some quote-unquote duds of matches, right, where we have matches that are not quite as interesting, I guess we would say, you know, just to kind of look over the matches coming up tomorrow to give you something like maybe Salzburg Genk maybe might not catch a lot of eyeballs. Whether it be in this country or, you know, elsewhere in the world, or Bruges Galatasaray, although Galatasaray does have quite the following. There are some seriously tasty battles coming up. Two of them tomorrow that we wanted to highlight and two of them on Wednesday. So let's start out with the first one, which I think got a little bit of breaking news today to the chagrin of Borussia Dortmund fans. And that is Lionel Messi's going to be healthy for tomorrow's matchup. Dortmund-Barca tomorrow, 3 p.m. Many were predicting that this match could go either way, even especially going the way of Dortmund, strictly because Messi's injury, Suarez was not healthy or considered healthy up until the weekend. Ousmane Dembele is out for a few weeks. So we've had a lot of injury, but somebody that we'll probably talk about later on in the show, a young man by the name of Ansu Fati, has really come onto the scene for Barcelona. Blah, I'm a little tongue-tied. And, you know, a team that I look at in Dortmund that has always brought on young talent. We talk about Christian Pulisic. We talk about the aforementioned Ousmane Dembele. We talk about Jadon Sancho now, the English international. There's a lot of tasty attacking pieces on that Dortmund side. I think many expected not necessarily a blowout, but maybe a higher scoring match. Now with the addition of Lionel Messi, all bets are off. Harry, I want to go to you first on this particular match because this one, is definitely doesn't necessarily mean that it's the tastiest of tomorrow's matchups, but man, it has got to be right at the top, don't you think?
Absolutely. I think on paper, you look at Dortmund and especially Barcelona, who have been probably one of the best teams in Europe over the last two decades. So on paper, it's a really, really fun matchup. Current form, I think you have to give it to Dortmund. They're currently sitting in second in the Bundesliga, whereas Barcelona, it's early days, but they're kind of lacking behind in fifth in La Liga. But I think the addition of Lionel Messi making his first start of the season for Barcelona is obviously a huge one, but it's huge for the average football fan. You want the best players out there for both sides, and I think it makes it probably the most enticing matchup of the week, just based on everyone being fit.
Yeah, I mean, I want to jump in as well and ask you this one, Joe, because, you know, you look at a tale of two teams, essentially, that are on different forms, as, you know, Harry mentioned, in the leagues. You know, you have Barcelona, who came off losing their first game of the season against Bilbao, and then going off and winning two and drawing Osasuna as well off the stretch. Where you look at Borussia Dortmund, you know, they've been sensational so far. You know, they haven't, they've only lost one game, and they're like 1 point behind RB Leipzig, who's top of the table, and ahead of Freiburg and Bayern Munich. So, and also with the addition of Lionel Messi, you kind of have to favor Barcelona this one, because, you know, you have the inclusion of Lionel Messi back on the team, but you also have the wonderful performances from two players that have stand out, I guess, so far in the season. Obviously, the aforementioned Ansu Fati, the 16-year-old who scored his debut goal for Barcelona over the weekend against Valencia. And you have Frank de Jong as well, you know, the new player that was signed by Ajax back in January and just came in. And he's been doing well so far for the team. He also scored on the weekend against Valencia. So you probably have to favor Barcelona in this one, because, and a sense, and I think essentially in these type of games, it's very important to pick up the points and maximum points, especially away in what really is a tough group.
Sure. You know, the one thing that concerns me with Barca is not necessarily the ability to score goals. I believe they scored 12 goals in four matches. So they're on pace to score 3 goals a match. I mean, you know, that's Barca numbers, right? But what concerns me is the amount of goals they're giving up. They've given up 7 goals in league so far this season. They're giving up almost 2 goals a match. And, you know, going back to the teams that they've played in La Liga so far this season, you know, you talk about the matchup against Valencia that they just had on the weekend, a match that they pretty much blew them out in, right? It was a 5-2 victory for them. But Osasuna, like you had mentioned before, drawing Barca. And again, these are Messi-less games. Beating Betis, but then losing to Bilbao. These are not massive high-scoring teams, right? They're not teams that usually light up the scoreboard, and they've given up 2 goals a match. So now you fast forward to their opponent tomorrow in Dortmund. Dortmund's another team that is prolific. They are scoring goals. They've only conceded just a hair over 1 goal a match. They've conceded 5 goals in league so far in 4 matches. So, you know, it sounds like to me that they've got their offense or their defense by offense act together. You know, Lucien Favre is good at that type of game planning, but at the same time, you know, you wonder if Barca could stop the guys like Marco Reus, like Paco Alcácer, who's you know, scoring goals against for Dortmund. He's picked up where he's left off, like Jadon Sancho. This is the challenge for Barca. I mean, I'd be a fool here to say there's no way Barca wins this match tomorrow. I'd be a fool to tell you there's no way Dortmund wins this match tomorrow. I think it's a highly unpredictable match, especially when you introduce Lionel Messi, you know, coming off an injury where he hasn't played in a couple weeks. I think that is going to be interesting how Valverde integrates him. But at the same time, you've got to really concern yourself with the defensive capabilities of Barca at this point, especially, you know, facing a high profile, high scoring, high octane offense team like Borussia Dortmund. I think it's going to be one of those interesting ones to see. I'm going to fast forward to the other matchup that we're going to see tomorrow, the other tasty matchup that we wanted to single out, because again, we talk about high powered offenses. Here's another two, Napoli Liverpool, also tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Napoli, again, you know, you look at their matchup, especially what's going to come to mind most recently for Serie A fans is going to be that match against Juve just a couple of weeks ago. Certainly a highlight, 4-3 to Juve in that one late. Juve was up 3-0. Napoli never gave up. You know, we've seen Napoli do that type of thing before where they come back from multiple goals down. Dries Mertens is still scoring goals for them, one of the top 5 scorers in their history. You know, so you look at a high powered offense and a guy like Ancelotti running the show there, one of the top coaches you'll ever see in world football. And then you flip to the other side. This is the defending champions. This is Sadio Mane, Mohamed Salah, Roberto Firmino. It's goals and goals and goals and goals. Goals all day, but they've got the defense to back it up. So, Rob, I'm going to go to you first with this particular matchup because the matchup is in Naples. You know, going into Naples to play a match is difficult for anybody. I don't care who you are. So that poses an interesting problem. Liverpool itself, currently one of the unbeaten teams in their league, unblemished at the moment. They have a lot to fight for. And being the defending champions, there's a chip on your shoulder, don't you think?
I think so, too. And I think there's also that kind of a factor of trying to get in a good result over there at the São Paulo, which, you know, as you said, Joe, is an intimidating thing to play for forever, for anyone that goes there. And looking into the group real quick, I mean, you know, you would have indeed favored both these teams getting in out of their group, Liverpool and Napoli, you know, over Salzburg and Genk, without no disrespect to them. But you have to favor them. So these type of games, especially the ones that happen early on, are the ones where you have to be focused in getting the difference between first and second. You know, you look at a Liverpool side that are completely in form, you know, 5 games, 5 wins. They've been flawless so far. Napoli, who, you know, have been giving a bit of a fight as well, you know, albeit from that dramatic loss to Juventus in the Serie A, you know, they've won also their first 2 games as well. So it's been quite of an, this is a game that I'm really interested in, because I feel as if, though, you look at two teams that obviously could score goals. You also have the factor of Chucky Lozano, Irving Lozano, coming into this Napoli side, see what he's able to do. It's not sure if he's going to start or not, but we could see him as an impact on the bench. And you look at a Liverpool side that, you know, you kind of have to also favor youth into favor. You know, you have the youngster, Rian Brewster, coming in, but you favor that in with players such as Trent Alexander-Arnold. You look at players like Joe Gomez. You know, you have a lot of young players on that team that could definitely try to help this this Liverpool side. And personally, this game could really go either way. I mean, Harry, looking at this intimidating game, I mean, is it right for Liverpool to come off the right path firstly in this game to get a good head start in the Champions League?
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think it's important to note that Liverpool actually played Napoli last year in the group stage and lost in Naples. It was a Immobile or a Dries Mertens goal in the 90th minute that ended up sinking Liverpool. And away from home in the Champions League last year, Liverpool struggled. They obviously lost to Napoli. They lost to Red Star Belgrade away from home. And so I think one thing Liverpool are going to want to do this year is start off on the right foot, improve their away from home record, and continue this unbeaten run that they're on right now. For Napoli, I believe their only defeat came to Juventus this season. But, I mean, as Joe said, they're high-flying in attack. You mentioned Chucky Lozano coming off the bench potentially. This Napoli team can definitely cause Liverpool trouble. They're probably the best team that Liverpool have faced so far this season, I mean, all competitions. And so it should be a tricky one for Liverpool. It could go either way. But, I mean, as you said, Naples is such a difficult place to go. The atmosphere is extremely intimidating. But you could argue Liverpool are prepared with that, having played at Anfield.
Definitely. And now going into the defending champions, the two teams who desperately want that Champions League, we're into perhaps the really most interesting. Well, you could say that there's a joint on Juventus. For me, this game is going to go, I think, very, very open. I think when you look at Atletico under Cholo Simeone, who have been just free-flowing and have done so well in La Liga so far, albeit losing it over the weekend, but, you know, the second place so far in La Liga over the rivals Real Madrid and Barcelona, only 1 point behind Sevilla. You look at the team that has really been revamped over the summer with players such as Joao Felix, who's turning into a star so far for Atletico Madrid. And I think that objective for them to finally win the Champions League, because, you know, they've been close, making it to 2 finals. Looking as an objective, more of an objective now, I think, towards then going and winning La Liga, whereas in Juventus, you know, they've gotten really strong as well with the inclusion of Mauricio Sarri, with the inclusion of Matheus De Ligt in the defense, who obviously was going to play a key role in this defense now with the injury to Giorgio Chiellini. But, you know, you do have some really key absences as well. You know, you look at DiCiglio that's out with a thigh injury, also Douglas Costa and Pjanic as well. You maybe want to favor Atletico on this one. I mean, Joe, I mean, you as the Juventino, this is a tough one for Juventus. And I think for now, if they really are serious to really fight for this Champions League, because we saw how last season, with all due respect, was it deemed a failure to not win the Champions League or the Coppa Italia, to just win one trophy in a season, and now having Cristiano Ronaldo, there is no place for error this season.
No, there isn't. And this, to be honest with you, this match, by all accounts, would be the toughest match Juve is going to have in this group. It's, you know, Leverkusen is certainly going to be difficult, but this is the one, I think, that everyone points their finger to and said, these are the two teams that are probably coming out of this group. And this match could not come at a worse time, because with all the injuries that you just mentioned, Pjanic is out. You know, you mentioned DiCiglio. Danilo's out now as well. I'm not sure if he's going to be, if he's totally been labeled out for the matchup, but I know he was injured on the weekend. You talk about, like you said, Chiellini. And Sarri's really gone to what many would have thought would have been, Sarri's gone to a much older team with Sami Khedira, with Blaise Matuidi. He's gone to a much older midfield, and that's made them look much slower. It is also given the appearance that like we saw with Fiorentina on the weekend, them really be able to expose that. And I'm worried that a Joao Felix built midfield, a quick midfield, and a good defensive midfielder that will be good against the counter will cause a lot of problems for the ability for Juve to possibly counterattack, especially being on the road. And I think this match, like I'd said earlier, comes at the worst time possible. Harry, I want to go over to you because I'd like your thoughts on it, because I think, again, this becomes a huge, huge problem for Juventus, don't you think?
Yeah. But on paper, Juventus's team seems like it can give anyone trouble. But we know Sarri hasn't had the best success in the Champions League in the past. And he does have an aging squad going against Simeone's well-drilled side. They've got youth in there. I think Atleti probably should be the favourites going into this one. But then again, you can never count out Cristiano Ronaldo. But off the top of my head, I can't remember whether or not he's suspended for this one. I may be completely wrong, and my mind may be deceiving.
No, he's going to play. He's good.
Yeah. So, but that's one person that you never want to bet against in the Champions League.
Sure, but at the same time, he hasn't really gotten off to that start in league play that we'd normally see. So, I think there are some concerns there with his ability to kind of turn it on. I know he's, like you said, when you've got Cristiano Ronaldo in the Champions League, all bets are off. I mean, he did it to Atleti the last time with the three goals in the second leg. He's done it to Atleti when his time at Real Madrid time and time and time again. This is, if I remember correctly, and I didn't look up the stat, but if I remember correctly, this is the team that he scored against the most out of any team in the world.
That's right. It is them.
So it is, it's a matchup that, quote unquote, he would favor, that he would feel confident in, but given all the injuries, I just feel like this is not the right time for Juve to be facing Atleti, especially on the road where they could use a full squad, where they could steal maybe a draw or steal a point. I don't see it going Juve's way this way on Wednesday. Talking about injuries, though, let's talk about the last matchup we want to talk about, and that's the Real Madrid PSG matchup coming up on Wednesday as well. Boy, talk about the injury derby on this one. This has got to be it. I mean, you've got Luka Modric, I think, went out. Marcelo went out earlier today. You've got a couple of suspensions. I believe Isco, I want to say, is out. Obviously, Marco Asensio was out for the season. On the other side, you've got Kylian Mbappe missing this. You've got Edinson Cavani. You've got Neymar returning, but you're missing quite a bit of firepower on the PSG side. So, Harry, I want to go to you. How much are the injuries going to affect what we're going to see as a product on the pitch on Wednesday?
I think it's a shame because PSG and Real Madrid, obviously two of Europeans' powerhouses and some of the best players in the world, would be on show. But obviously Mbappe's injured, Cavani's injured, Neymar is actually suspended. So PSG's three top players are out. And that throws their plans into a tailspin. So, you have Icardi coming in, so he could make an impact for PSG. Eden Hazard is going to be making his Champions League debut for Real Madrid. But even with Hazard, he never has been that spectacular of a Champions League performer. So this is a game where, if everyone was healthy, you really couldn't split it. It could go either way. And even when everyone's injured, not healthy, you still can't split it. Mm-hmm. Even the backups that are going to be out there, it really could go either way. And the injuries have really, really affected what could have been one of the great Champions League games of the season.
No doubt. So, Rob, I want to go over to you with this one because a player that you and I are very familiar with, Mauro Icardi, is probably going to get his crack at this, don't you think, with Neymar out, with Cavani out, with Mbappe out. You're missing so many pieces. He'll be out there with his countrymen, Angel Di Maria. You've got a decent midfield there. Is this Icardi's chance, really?
Yes, absolutely. And I think more than just Icardi's chance, I think, and this is a player that I think we need to definitely keep our eyes on, because I think out of all the drama and kind of reputation that he's been building off around Madrid, which unfortunately has gotten some hate. I want to see what happens to Keylor Navas in this one.
Yeah.
Because, you know, facing his former team, a team that I don't understand why he has been given the amount of respect that he deserves, becoming one of their one of their greatest goalkeepers ever, being part of that big run of Champions League runs over the last few years. I think he has a point to prove, more so than Icardi in this one. Because yes, Icardi comes in trying to replace the big names that are in, like Mbappe, Neymar, and Cavani, and be that main striker, even for Pedro Sarabia as well, coming in making his debut in the Champions League. But the one player that I'm really focused on about is going to be Keylor Navas, how he's able to take on that kind of that pressure against his former team and against a team that, you know, is also under a bit of pressure as well. You know, with players like James, Bale, Benzema, as you said, Hazard coming back into the team, but with also a lot of injuries as well. Mm-hmm. While it isn't as the match that we might be very interested about just because of the star power that it is out, there are still a lot of individual storylines to focus on this one. So I can't wait to see what happens.
Yeah, I agree. You know, Harry, and I want to throw one more question over to you. Does the time spent in the locker room at Real Madrid for Keylor Navas and everything that he's done for that club, I mean, he is part of those Champions League winning sides. Does he gain an advantage being in goal against his former club?
I think you could argue, yeah. If it came down to a last minute penalty, whoever would be taking it for Real Madrid, Keylor Navas is obviously going to be quite well prepared for that. But he just probably knows the mannerisms that go on with these Real Madrid players better than anyone. And I completely agree with Rob that he was completely disrespected by the club and even by the fans. And to just ship him off like that after all he gave to that club, I wouldn't be shocked if he puts in one of the performances of his career.
Oh, it absolutely. You would almost expect him to do that. He's going to, with everything on the line and a chip on his shoulder, as we would like to say, he's certainly going to be focused at doing that for sure. So, Harry, I want to before I actually let you go, I want to talk about these four matchups in general. Which of the four are you most interested in? And ultimately, of these four matchups, these eight sides, do you feel that the winner is in of the Champions League is in this group, or do you feel it is one of the other teams that we haven't talked about yet?
First off, I think my number one matchup of the week would probably be Napoli-Liverpool.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just really, really interested to see how Liverpool's away form in the Champions League group stage is going to start off. And this could set the tone for how the group ends up. And then probably just followed behind would be Dortmund-Barcelona, just because elsewhere in their group, Inter Milan plays Slavia Prague. And no matter who wins here, and it's, let's say, Inter win against Prague, we could be looking at Dortmund or Barcelona being 3 points behind early. And in a group of death, you cannot fall behind that early. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see just what kind of result we get and who starts off on the back foot in the group of death.
Mm. You know, Harry, I'm just going to jump in real quick before we do let you go, and we would be remiss to not talk about your beloved Chelsea and really under a campaign that is quite different. You know, they are back in the Champions League for the first time in a couple of years under a new manager in Frank Lampard, a club legend in Frank Lampard. But at the same time, also doing a bit of business that wasn't as expected as they thought it would be. You know, obviously off to really a good start in the season using a bunch of youth. I mean, you know, obviously with the inclusion of Christian Pulisic over the summer transfer window, you know, you have players such as Tammy Abraham, who's been on tremendous form so far for Chelsea, you know, scored a hat-trick over the weekend. You know, you have other players like Mason Mount that are demonstrating their capability, Fiacco Tomori, who's also been one of the standout young players. I mean, it's a team full of youth in this side. I mean, firstly, what are your expectations on this whole start of the season so far? You know, the, I guess the impressions on youth that we are seeing from players like Abraham like Mason Mount, Tomori, Pulisic, and also heading into this Champions League campaign, and really what does seem to be an even group but a tough group. You know, what are your expectations for Chelsea this season?
It's probably the first Chelsea season in a long time where I haven't really had any expectations. I know that we're currently in a rebuild. Going into the season, I didn't have a whole lot of faith in Frank Lampard. I was one of the skeptical ones. But we have started well. We do have our blemishes. We can't keep a clean sheet to save our lives. And that is going to be a big talking point going forward. But we still have N'Golo Kante to come back. Antonio Rudiger is just coming back. He picked up a knock on the weekend. So we are just shoring up our defense. Reece James is still coming in, another young player. Going forward, we look good. Tammy Abraham he's shocked the world. People said he couldn't do it for Chelsea, and he's got 7 goals in his last 3 games. And he's tied for top of the Premier League in goals scored. So I think going forward, we do look quite good. We still have Callum Hudson-Odoi and Ruben Loftus-Cheek to come back from injury. And it is a big surprise to see just how well our youth are doing. Going into the season, I think pundits and fans alike were talking about, would the youth be the weak point for Chelsea this season? And they're the strong point. And matter of fact, it's the old guard, the likes of Azpilicueta and Willian and Pedro. Those are the ones that seem to be struggling, actually. So it's a season so far that's had a few mixed results, but you can tell that the fans are buying in and the players are buying into what Lampard wants. The spirit of the club seems to be more positive than ever before. And the Champions League, it's a group that we should be getting out of when everyone's fit. We should be beating the likes of Valencia and Lille. I love the quote from Lampard today where he said he treats the Champions League a bit like the first part of the group stage is the group stage. But after Christmas, you have to separate it. And you have to take it stage by stage. You can't be thinking ahead, game by game. So I'm confident for the Champions League. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to be one of those magical runs where we go on and win it like 2012. But who knows?
Harry, just real quick, do we have a couple more minutes with you? Can we spend a couple more minutes?
Absolutely.
Oh, fantastic. Rob, I'm going to make an executive decision here. I know we were going to talk about a couple of topics, and one of the topics was to talk about the emergence of Tammy Abraham and Timo Pukki into the Premier League and how they've rushed to the top of the scoring title. I wanted, if you have 2 seconds, I'd love your opinion on it. And Rob, I want to go to you as well with it, because obviously, like you said, Tammy Abraham right now is co-leader with Sergio Aguero at 7 goals on the season. Timo Pukki's right behind them at 6 goals. Pukki also scores a big goal for Norwich this weekend in defeat of Man City, which I think took everyone by huge surprise. So the emergence of those two people, especially when we saw a transfer window, you know, that brought Pukki in on a free, but I think much was made of someone like Nicola Pepe, who came over from Lille into Arsenal. We expected a lot of firepower. We've gotten some decent performances out of them, but I know they can't defend to save their lives. But in terms of Abraham and Pukki, two players that have just completely burst onto the scene, I'd like your thoughts on those particular players, and can they sustain what they've been doing so far?
Yeah, I mean, it's been really interesting to see that kind of youth. And then not just in Tammy Abraham as well, but, you know, you look at so many young players coming about, like Mason Mount at Chelsea, you know, Marcus Rashford, who really isn't that young either, but he is doing well. But and also you're really seeing kind of the outsider. I mean, yeah, it's so early to say in the season what's going to happen. I think once we get into the later half of the season, we might see some of the familiar names. But so far, looking at what a player like Abraham is doing, you know, I would have to agree with Harry here and said that he's really been taking that hype very well, I would say. And of course, the big question will be is, and I remember this conversation, or at least seeing it on Twitter, like when he got the number 9 shirt, a shirt that's been essentially, I don't know if we could say cursed, but not a good shirt for Chelsea players in recent history. Maybe this is the exception, because, you know, you have a young player, you know, who's obviously shown at Aston Villa last season how good he really is, you know, scoring 25 goals in 37 games. It shows that he really is up for the next level, and I think it shows that with the consistency that he brings, as well as the capability that he's able to possess for this Chelsea side that is so dependent on youth, with a manager that is always going to be an advocate for youth. I think he's one of the big promises there. And for Pookie as well, he's been a sensation so far. I think he's been part of a Norwich side that many have already, at least prior to the start of the season, many have already thought of them as relegation bound. So it's been great. It's been great to see some of these like kind of outsider or like young talents go on and succeed so far at the start of the season. I mean, Harry, what do you think so far of both Pookie and Abraham's start of the season so far?
I think they're very similar in a way, despite their ages being quite far apart. I think Pookie is 29, while Tammy Abraham is just 21. But you look at both of them in the Championship last season, they were superb for Norwich and for Aston Villa alike. Basically led those teams to promotion. And a lot of the chat surrounding them coming into this season was, can they score against Premier League opposition? That's the big talking point around strikers that come up on these promoted sides, and time again they fail. And Pookie is seemingly so far has established himself as one of those Premier League cult heroes, in the same breath as the likes of, let's say, Michu or Amir Zaki in the past. Kind of a fan favorite amongst the neutrals, someone that makes people want to watch Norwich. And I think he's going to keep up for the season. And I think he'll end up keeping Norwich up with his goals. Tammy Abraham, on the other hand, what has impressed me the most is his ability to bounce back. He missed the big penalty in the Super Cup and was obviously subject to some horrible racist abuse in the days after that. And for a young guy to go through that and bounce back and perform at such a high level just speaks volume to how great of a footballer he is, and speaks on his character. Whether or not he can keep up the rate he's scoring at, 7 in his last 3 is quite unsustainable. But I definitely think he'll break 20 goals for Chelsea this year. He's getting himself in the right positions, and he's finishing his chances. And obviously, as a Chelsea fan, I couldn't be more delighted to see a young kid come through the academy and bang goals in like that for the first team. So I think it's refreshing for Premier League fans to sit back, and obviously we see Aguero doing Aguero things and Mohamed Salah doing Mohamed Salah things. But to see the likes of Pookie and Tammy Abraham up there scoring goals and putting themselves on highlight reels week in, week out, it's a nice change for Premier League fans, I think.
No doubt about it. Do you think they can sustain what they've done so far this season?
I think Pookie more than Abraham.
Okay.
Just because Pookie is more of an experienced and established player, and whereas Abraham, it's difficult for a young guy to consistently put goals away at that rate.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely think by the end of the season, you'll see both of their names up there alongside the likes of Aguero.
Rob, how about you? Who do you think is more likely to be able to sustain this this goal scoring pace?
I think it's Abraham. I think I have to go with him, not just because of youth, but I just think that with the experience that he's getting in the Champions League as well, I think that just serves him to be much more of a player that's able to be more experience in a way, with all the contrast that Norwich isn't having, mm-hmm. With only competing in domestic competitions.
Yeah, you know,
For me, obviously there's more upside for me with Abraham because of his youth and his age. He'll be able to withstand the he's more equipped to withstand the rigors of Champions League, you know, FA Cup, the league play. He's going to be able to last longer in those situations. I also like Abraham, though, because of his supporting staff. You know, the Willians of the world and the N'Golo Kantes of the world, the players that can feed him the ball, I think will benefit him as well. But Harry, I do take your point into consideration, and it's interesting because Pukki's going to be the guy that does have much more experience. He also, think about it, he's not only doing it for club, but he's doing it for country. Scored against Italy in European qualification in this last international break. So this is somebody that has done it on multiple stages now, and I think that will serve him well because he might be a guy that knows how to pace himself and handle his position well. So that it's going to be interesting to see, one, if either of them can win the scoring title, two, how long they can both keep their names at the top of that list moving in the season, especially with guys like Harry Kane, like Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, like Sergio Aguero, who will be out there scoring goals as well day in and day out on the season as well. So, Harry, before we let you go, where can folks find you on Twitter and where can they find your work?
You can find me on Twitter at HarryCFC_. And work-wise, I'm all over the place at the moment. So, yeah, just keep an eye out for anything written by me and make sure to follow me on Twitter.
Fantastic. And we recommend that as well. So, Harry, thank you very much for joining us on the show. We really appreciate you sticking with us this extra long time. And look forward to having you back again very, very soon, mate.
Thank you so much for having me.
Have a good night.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem.
And that was Harry Harris joining us on the show. And I'm glad we got to steal him. I know normally we go through some extra topics, but it felt like for me, especially Rob, when you went down that that road with Tammy Abraham and Chelsea, that I felt it was like great to talk to him about that. So let's do a couple of topics real quick here. We've already talked about Abraham and Pukki and their scoring prowess in the EPL so far this season. Let's talk about a young guy. I mean, a really, really, really young guy.
Is he even old enough to get his license? Is that? I think that's how young he is.
Maybe you know. I guess he's old enough to date my daughter, right? At that point, so.
Well, which, I mean, if it makes you rich. Well,
yeah, right. The sacrificial lamb. No, that's right. And we're talking about Ansu Fati, who is the exact same age as my daughter. I didn't look at his birthday. I'd love to see what his birthday is.
One second.
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind, I'd love to find out how close he is to my daughter.
Halloween 2002.
Oh, okay. So he's going to be 9 months older than my daughter then. So he's going to be 17. So he's an old man. but Ansu Fati scored a goal and an assist on the weekend. He is the youngest person ever in La Liga history to score a goal and an assist in the same game. Fascinating young man. He's got 2 goals in the season, really gotten his chance to jump onto the scene, especially given the injury to Messi or the multiple injuries that we've seen to multiple players at Barcelona. Rob, you know, obviously an extremely confident young man. He showed it on the weekend against Valencia. I mean, he was fantastic. Does this kid get a chance in the Champions League?
Well, I mean, he does. He was included in the squad for the Borussia Dortmund game. So I would say yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think when you're on this type of form, you always want to see how you could prove yourself. I think what's important about a player like him is you don't want to overhype him. And yes, we have seen players who have been hyped and unfortunately have gone the bad route of either injuries or just not performing well, be it from a professional level or an amateur level or anything like this. But I think with Ansu Fati, I think with him being able to go into such a club like Barcelona, you know, he's already part of the youth team and he has been for quite some time. But for him to just gel into that team and immediately get an assist in his first game and then get a goal as well. Well, actually, no, he scored first and then he got
an assist.
Yeah. And then he got the goal against Valencia. So for him to do that within the span of 2 consecutive games in La Liga and to see that from a 16-year-old, so soon to be 17-year-old, I think shows that Valverde realizes that, you know, that they have a gem here that they need to keep on. They need to, like, have him there. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens to him. I'm hopeful that he does get some opportunities, especially now with Dembele still injured. Perhaps he will get those minutes. Obviously, I don't see him as a starter. But what I think this might benefit a player like Lionel Messi, and I'll tell you why. Because when you have Fati performing in the level that he is, you see Messi, who, let's be honest, has been so dependent. Barcelona have been so dependent on him throughout various games that you get sometimes that burnout in the later stages, being in the Champions League or anything like that. And you know, we saw them only win La Liga last year. So in a way, you kind of see him getting a bit more rest.
Yeah.
If you get what I'm trying to say here. Mm-hmm. So for a player like Fati to come in and perform well, I think the only one that has to be smiling is going to be players like Lionel Messi. You know, sure. He gets that rest, and is more energized and more, you know, to his best of his ability for the more important games coming up. Whereas you have players like Fati coming in and Griezmann, who obviously came in the summer, you know, gelling right in and helping the team win.
Yeah, I was going to say the other component that should be very excited is actually the Barcelona fans. You think about it, Frankie de Jong, if I remember correctly, 21 years old. You've got Ansu Fati, 16, going to be 17. Ousmane Dembele, I don't think he's broken 20 yet.
I'll check, but no, I think he's 22? He's 22, yeah. Arthur, who is 23.
Okay, another piece, right? I mean, think about those types of pieces that have not only come onto the Barcelona stage, which is certainly one of the brightest stages in world football, okay, going into the new camp to play, right? That is, they don't get much bigger than playing there. And shining, and absolutely shining. We saw the first two goals this weekend against Valencia was De Jong from Fati and Fati from De Jong. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's to see these kids succeed at this stage, at this point in their careers, especially players that you would expect are going to stay at Barcelona. Because Barcelona, let's be honest, we talked about who was the player that we were talking about? Oh, we were talking about Lautaro. And and you said, oh, he's going to leave Inter. And I said, no, because Inter have the money to keep him. You know, Inter don't need to sell him. This is the same situation in Barca. Inter does not need to sell Ansu Fati. They don't need to sell Frankie de Jong anytime soon. These are players that are going to be there for a long time, especially if they're going to produce at the level they're producing at. So this is a massive, massive win for Barcelona to be able to bring up this type of talent from within. Because if I remember right, he was in the Barcelona, program.
So, yeah, he just got promoted this season.
Correct. So to come up through La Masia and get there is certainly a massive feat. And is very promising for the...
Which is also kind of a throwback to what they have been used to, because you've seen that kind of that reputation be a bit soured of players coming from La Masia and not performing to the extent as former players used to be. Whereas now you're seeing someone like Fati kind of bringing a bit of hope to the fans.
No doubt. No doubt about it. So it's going to be interesting to watch him as they move on. And you would think with all this praise that we're heaping on Ansu Fati that that Barcelona would be at the top of the table. But that's the next thing we want to talk about, Rob, is in the last topic of the night, the fact that we are here September 16th, we're only 4, maybe 5 weeks in, depending on what league you're looking at, match days in. And we only have 2 unblemished teams left in the top 5 leagues. And I know, Rob, for, you know, at least up until mid-October of last year, at least that, maybe even a little deeper, we had 4, 5, 6. Remember, we would talk about PSG. We'd talk about Juve. We would talk about, I want to say it was Barca at the time. I think it was City and Liverpool that were running neck and neck like that last year. Do you remember?
Yes.
We had Bayern Munich, right? Or actually, Bayern got off to the slow start. I want to say it was Dortmund that we were talking about in these terms. And it was just, you know, we've always seen traditionally 4 to 6, 7 teams get into mid-October without a blemish, without a loss, without a draw, even some of them doing the feat both in Champions League and in domestically. So now this year, you fast forward, we haven't even kicked a ball in the group stages of the Champions League, and we've only got 2 perfect teams left. And in theory, because of the matchups, you could potentially have 1 perfect team before we hit the weekend, right? You could, or you could really have none if you truly think about it. The 2 perfect teams right now are out of the EPL, Liverpool, which many would, I guess, expect, right? They haven't had a massive
run of difficult games to open the season. They did play Norwich. They handily beat them. They beat Southampton. They beat Arsenal when, like we said, Arsenal couldn't defend to save their lives. Burnley and then Newcastle, which Newcastle is questionable right now as well. We look at we go over to the Serie A. We go to Inter. Now, they've only played three matches. They haven't played five. But they've beaten Lecce, they've beaten Cagliari, and they've beaten Udinese, three teams that are at the bottom of the table. So, you know, they haven't really been challenged, these two teams. But to sit there and look at Juve picking up the draw on the weekend against Fiorentina, a team that's in the relegation spot. We go to Ligue 1, and we look at PSG losing in the second week of the season to Rennes. Rennes, that's at the top of the table with them. They're only 2 points back. We go to the Bundesliga, right? And the Bundesliga gives us Borussia Dortmund. I'm sorry, not Borussia Dortmund. I want to talk about Bayern Munich first. Bayern Munich sitting in fourth place right now with two wins, two draws, where RB Leipzig's leading the way. And their first blemish came on the weekend in that draw to Bayern Munich. So, you know, let's go to La Liga. La Liga, we're talking about Sevilla, who just literally dropped a couple weeks ago their match against Celta Vigo. They tied 1-1. Atleti was also with them as well, but they dropped their perfect record on the weekend against Sociedad. So we're seeing a lot less. We're seeing less teams get to that perfect mark that much deeper in the season. We also want to couple that, Rob, with some performances, right? I mean, let's start none better for me right now than Freiburg. Freiburg currently sitting right near the top of the Bundesliga. They're in third place, but they're tied for second with Dortmund, just back on goal differentials or goals scored. They are ahead of Bayern Munich. They're ahead of Wolfsburg. They're ahead of Schalke, Mönchengladbach, Leverkusen. These are all teams playing in European competitions. And here's Freiburg in second place, technically. We talk about a couple of these other sides in the Premier League. Look who's back. Leicester, currently tied for third. Right after five matches, they're moving their way up, only suffering their first defeat of the season just on the weekend, 1-0 to United, which I think some people would be surprised. We go to Italy. Bologna currently sitting two wins and a draw, their draw opening the season. But this is a team technically without a head coach, Rob. You know, Sinisa Mihajlovic is currently undergoing treatment for leukemia. And this is a team that was down to Brescia. I want to say it was 3-1, scoring three late goals, winning the match, and then on the bus ride back home, stopping at the hospital to cheer their coach on. A beautiful, beautiful story there. We're seeing a lot of that. Ligue 1 is crowded at the top, and it's not Lyon. It is Rennes. It's Nantes, right? Lille's still there, amazingly, in fifth place, in ninth with 9 points. How they're there after their massive fire sale right now is beyond me, but they're also there as well. So I want to ask you, Rob, I want to get your few minutes on this. Are we seeing, I guess, what we would call here in the United States, especially with the NFL, are we starting to see parity in European football?
If so, that's a good thing.
because then on the weekend, you're not worried about, if PSG goes to Nantes, you know, there's a chance Nantes going to win that match. So I agree with you when you say it's a good thing.
Yeah, and I think also as well, I think when you look at a lot of teams that were being, you know, basically reshifted and remade during the transfer window, that does kind of have an effect where teams are not expected to gel off the bat. I mean, with certain exceptions, obviously. So you do see that. I think with, let's put it in this case, I think with the exception of Inter, you know, you look at Liverpool, they didn't get anyone in the transfer window, and they looked, then they have the same team, look what happened to them. So it's kind of that consistency. Inter, on the other hand, you know, have bought in very well, and it's gelled properly, whereas for the others, it's been quite different. So yeah, you are seeing this kind of parity. I think it's great. I think it's not good for the teams that, and the fans of the teams that are expected to win those separate titles. But, you know, who's to say that we're probably going to see a bit more parity, not just in European leagues, but also in the Champions League coming up, and as well in the Europa League. So, yeah, I think it's still early days, too, because you're talking four or five games into a 37, 38-plus game season. So it is still early days, but I think if this continues on to the next few months, we're in for a good treat of drama.
jokingly, because I'm going to... Because it's jokingly, have Liverpool won the Premier League? They actually have the biggest lead of any team in any of the five leagues. Now, granted, La Liga, La Liga and Bundesliga have played 4 matches. Serie A's only played 3. Ligue 1's played 5, just like the Premier League, and it's a 2-point spread from PSG down to second, third, and fourth place with Marseille, which we didn't even talk about. It's a 5-point gap from Liverpool to City. And again, jokingly, but as it is starting to evolve, are you worried that we're not going to see a league race in the Premier League like we've seen in years past?
Well, why are you worried?
Well, I mean, that's one of the appeals of the Premier League, especially, you know, you think about it even last year. It seems like we've always got, a certain amount of teams, 2 or 3, 4 teams that are vying for that title, you know, with 2 or 3 weeks to play. And on this pace, this is going to be over after Christmas, you know. And again, I'm part of me is jokingly saying all this because we know what Manchester City is. But where we talk about the big six in England, are we looking at a big two now for the next few years? Just because it seems like Spurs and United and Chelsea and Arsenal, the other teams that we would throw in that quote unquote big six, just don't have it to compete right now with Liverpool and City.
Yeah, maybe. And I think with teams that have more depth as well, will be able to use that to their advantage into the later game. So, yeah, you definitely could see that.
Well, then, you know, and again, to finish my joke, then we'll have to start calling the EPL the Farmers League, right? Only 2 teams. That's one of our favorite jokes, isn't it? It seems like it always is. So I know we don't have anything left on the docket in terms of topics we want to talk about. So let me give it to you, my friend, to give us the matches of the week coming up. We already gave you the Champions League matches, but let's do the rest of the matches of the week and let's go back to that trivia question.
Sure. So let's go into the matches of the week that we have. We'll start off, obviously, in the Europa League because we already have our matches of the week in the Champions League. But in the Europa League, we have Eintracht Frankfurt taking on Arsenal Thursday at 12:55 p.m. In the Bundesliga, we have Werder Bremen taking on the top team in the Bundesliga, RB Leipzig, Saturday at 12:30 p.m. In Serie A, we have the Derby della Madonnina, Milan against Inter, Saturday at 2:45 p.m. Could be a game where Inter could get their first blemish. In La Liga, we have Granada against Barcelona, Saturday at 3 p.m., where Barcelona can look to regain back their momentum in the league. We look at Ligue 1 with Lyon against PSG, Sunday at 3 p.m. We also have, in MLS, the Red Bull against Philadelphia Union, Sunday at 6:30 p.m. as we get set to decide our playoff teams. And I think our match of the weekend, if we could say, we have Chelsea against Liverpool, Sunday at 11:30 a.m. Liverpool look to hopefully continue their unbeaten streak, whereas Chelsea, you know, coming off a motivated win over Wolves and fresh out of youth, as we mentioned with Tammy Abraham and other players, look to get Liverpool's first blemish of the season.
All right. And since we're running short on time, my friend, if you wouldn't mind giving us a trivia question again.
Sure. So Chelsea's average age of 21 years and 124 days is the youngest average across all the 98 teams in the top 5 European leagues so far this season. Mm-hmm. Can you name the other 4 teams to make up that top 5?
So I've got 5 names written down.
Okay.
One that I'm going to give you, just strictly based on all the injuries and all the information we've talked about them tonight, Barcelona.
Barcelona's not in the top 5.
Wow, because I think De Jong's got 2 goals. Obviously, Fati's got 2 goals, and they are, that's 4 of the 12 goals. That's a third of their goals. I'm surprised.
Yep.
All right, so let me cross out Barca. I'm going to give you, because of Kai Havertz, although I don't know how many goals he scored so far this season, I'll give you Bayer Leverkusen.
It is not Bayer Leverkusen either.
I have 2 more German teams, so.
Okay.
I'm going to give you Dortmund.
Nope.
Wow. That's a young team, too. And then I'm going to give you Leipzig.
Nope.
Wow. And then I'm failing terribly. Last one I have written down is Inter, because Lautaro. But I have a feeling that I'm kind of wrong there, too.
Nope.
Wow.
I'll give you a hint. 2 French clubs,
okay.
An English club, and a German club, but it's not the one that you mentioned.
And a German club, not the one that I mentioned. Let me just... I've got the standings up. I'm not looking at goals or anything like that. I'm just looking at the standings. Let me go to the German clubs real quick. So I gave you Leipzig. I gave you Dortmund. I know it's not Bayern Munich. I'm looking at teams that might have scored a lot of goals. We said it's not Leverkusen. Eintracht got rid of a lot of their pieces. you know, I'll throw Eintracht out there. God, I hate that answer, but Eintracht Frankfurt?
Nope.
The only other one that I really want to go with is going to be Freiburg as the surprise.
Nope.
Yeah, okay. So let's move away from Germany. You're going to have to give me the German team, and I don't want to start naming 18 sides.
I'll give you the German team. How about that?
All right, give me the German team.
At 22 years and 169 days, the last team to make out into the top five is Schalke.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I would not have expected that. I'll have to go and look and see. They've only scored 8 goals in the season, so I'll have to look deeper at them. The English side. Okay, let me go to the English side real quick. And we said Chelsea's the first one. Timo Pukki is not a young player, so I'm not going to go to Norwich. Everton, I don't think it's going to be them. You know what? Watford hasn't scored many goals, but I'm sorry, not Watford, Wolves. They haven't scored many goals either, but I'm wondering if, you know what, is it Wolves?
No.
Okay, it's not Newcastle.
It's a big team, I'll tell you that.
I was going to say, it could be Villa.
No, bigger.
It's not, so you're saying it's one of the big six?
Yes.
Oh, wow, okay. It's not. I'm going to go with United.
At 22 years and 124 days, it's Manchester United in fourth.
I can't think of the kid's name now, but he scored a couple of goals for them already. So Manchester.
Rashford?
No, it's not Marcus Rashford that I was thinking of. It's another player.
Daniel James?
Thank you, Daniel James. So I didn't, I know, but Rashford has 3 goals, and Daniel James has a couple, I think, as well. 1 or 2, I think James has scored. I'd have to check that. But, you know, if that's the case, it's going to be half of United's 8 goals. So that would make sense. You gave me the German side. So I have 2 French teams I got to give you.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to start with Lille just because they got rid of all their players. So they had to bring on players, probably brought up youth. So I'm going to give you Lille.
Lille is in second with 21 years of 269 days.
All right, so I need to give you one more, huh?
Yes. It's a team you're not, and it's also a team that you're not surprised. You're not going to be surprised of.
Really?
Actually, sorry, you might be surprised of. Sorry.
Not going to be Lyon.
Nope.
I'm going to give you Rennes as my final answer.
Nope.
All right, give it to me then.
At 22 years and 120 days, the third youngest team in the top five European, the top goal scorers in the European leagues is Toulouse.
Toulouse, wow! Now that is shocking to me. Toulouse, 6 goals so far in the season, so I'll have to go look at that a little closer. So that's a great trivia question, my friend. That's for sure. So looking at the docket, I don't see anything left for us. So let's hit the closing music.
Well, I guess we could mention, and we forgot to mention this last week. Right. Diego Maradona's a coach.
Oh, that's right, Gimnasia. Now, well, this is where the world has gone to hell. Diego Maradona's the head coach, and we now get Diego Maradona coaching cam. So now they have a camera on Diego Maradona every week.
You saw that. You saw that. I posted that.
I did see that. I also saw the fact that I guess when whoever they were playing on the weekend, I want was Rossing, right?
When they beat them 2-1.
Yeah, but I guess the first goal that Rossing scored, he had to like turn to his coach and go, "Did it score? Did that go in?" Like he wasn't sure. And I want to say it was Dan Edwards that posted that video, and he said, in all fairness, it was very close. It didn't look like it went in. So, you know, in Maradona's defense, but the Maradona era is off and running with flying colors. We get Maradona, you know, bench cam. It can only be disastrous from here, right?
Well, no, as long as we get funny post-match interviews.
Oh, I think we will be obliged with that for sure. So, all right, my friend, let's hit the closing music, right?
Let's do it.
All right, here it comes. So, for episode 254 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Harry Harris for joining us tonight. Next week, we're going to go back into the Champions League after match day 1. We'll look at the leagues again with special guest Amadi Thiam, who is going to be joining us for the show. So, for episode 254 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I am Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.